Welcome back to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Suntress. It's time for part two of our view from the floor at C2E2. And we've got some great floor interviews coming up from guys like Nick Spencer and Fred Van Lente and Ryan Dunleavy of Comic Book Comics. Jai Nitz will be joining us to talk about his work for Dynamite and Disney. Paul Story is starting to write some really interesting graphic novels for Tweener, since a good series, and we'll be talking about that. Jeremy Bastian will join us to talk about where he stands on his Cursed Pirate Girls series. And we wrap things up with Josh Elder. And we wrap things up with Josh Elder, who will be talking about his fine work for... Finally, Josh Elder joins us to talk about Reading with Pictures, his comic book literacy organization that is just getting underway, and some of the ways that he is trying to get comics into the classroom. It's all coming up on this edition of Word Balloon. Word Balloon is brought to you today by the Summit City Comic Con. It's happening in Fort Wayne, Indiana, June 18th from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at the Grand Wayne Center. Now, we went to the first inaugural Comic Con for Summit City last year. It was a great time. This is a tremendous one-day show featuring such artists like Andy Jewett, Tim Seeley, Dave Wagner, Kyle Latino, Tom Scioli, Tom Kelly, Steve Bryant, Jim Heffron, Ian Brill, Hilary Barda. Really great opportunity to see local artists and get some great sketches and meet with local writers as well. Good panels. It's just a wonderful one-day Comic-Con that's put on by the In-Stock Trades and Discount Comic Book Service people. It's always a great time, so make sure you come out to it. It's the Summit City Comic-Con happening June 18th from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at the Grand Wayne Center in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Hope to see you there.
All right, Sunday, we're about midway through the con. It's starting to wind down, but I'm glad that I was able to find Nick Spencer, who we literally randomly bumped into each other. I'm like, dude, stand still. I've been selling T-shirts. I haven't had a chance to talk to people. So good to see you.
Great to see you, man. Great to see you.
So much has happened since our talk. I mean, all of these huge DC plans. I was looking forward to this awesome Supergirl run. And it's okay, because you juke to the left. We find you at the House of Ideas. And the good news is... you're doing even more titles, and it's terrific, man. Great job on War Machine so far. We're two issues in.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been a blast to work on with. It's great to get to collaborate with Barry Kitson, working
with
Alejandro.
That doesn't suck.
Yeah, no, it's really cool. You know, I mean, it's the first time I got to do an extended amount of work with a guy that's been around for a while. Really, almost all the artists that I've worked with have either been in for a few pages, like Chaykin or Perez, or they've been
Pikers.
Yeah.
Those guys.
Those
idiots.
Guys. You know, it was so funny. Yesterday, I was doing the Avengers panel with Brian, and he was talking about those two guys, you know, as being like, you know, the huge honors of his career to work with. And I was like, hey, wait a second. I worked with those guys this year, you know, which was kind of a nice feeling, you know, but to get to do a sustained run with Barry was a lot of fun. And I'm really proud of how the first sort of mini arc, the first three issues have come out. And then the fourth, which is sort of an epilogue that Ariel Olivetti did.
Okay.
And he really nailed it. It's something you've never seen from Ariel before. He's changed his style a bit, and it's really phenomenal work.
Is this a limited series then, or is it an ongoing? What's
no,
the deal?
No, yeah. Then
four is an epilogue to that three issue arc.
Then Rhodey has to deal with some Fear Itself stuff, and it's going to be an Iron Man versus Iron Fist story.
Oh, awesome.
It's great. The Immortal Weapons are in it.
Terrific, Vaughn.
Yeah,
I love those guys.
Yeah, it's basically about hell versus hell, and there's going to be some new characters, and it's a big faith versus science story, and Danny and Jim aren't exactly going to see eye to eye on some things. Danny's a different guy now because of what happened to him in New Avengers, and there's some changes to him that we just haven't seen anywhere yet, and I'm a huge fan of the character, so I was I'm going for that. So we're going to start to see some of the after effects of... Danny's encounter with the Eye of Agamotto and how it's changed him somewhat.
And have you bringing in the other immortal weapons? Have you had a chance to talk to Matt or Ed in terms of their takes on the character? Or I mean, obviously you're a fan. So.
Yeah, I'm going to be real soon. I mean, that is one of my favorite Marvel runs ever. And you know, I was sitting around thinking, wow, I'm playing with Iron Man toys. I'm playing with Iron Fist toys. Matt is a generous dude. You know, so it's a blast. It's a blast. Yeah, I mean, those guys define that character, and I'm looking forward to talking to them both, hopefully.
And Secret Avengers, you're doing the Fear Itself stuff for Secret Avengers.
Yeah.
That's cool. And I really enjoy that team, and it's been a lot of fun watching it play with the characters and stuff. I don't want to get, if you can't get into specifics, it's okay. Will the team change from Ed's current lineup? No, and you don't have to go into specifics.
Yeah, no, the roster is going to stay the same. Really, what I did was I took the opportunity in Fear Itself. Some of my favorite tie-ins to previous Marvel events have been some of the stuff that Brian's done in New Avengers, especially during Secret Invasion and Civil War, which was that you would take sort of a big splash page event from the main book, and you would spend 22 pages saying this is how it impacts this character. And so all three of my Fear Itself issues are close spotlights on Beast, Valkyrie, and Black Widow, who are three of my favorite characters. And all of them are going to be profoundly changed as a result of the events of Fear Itself. A lot's going to happen to them. They're going to be different people walking out of it than they were coming in. It's a chance to get to spend some time with those characters and to spend some time in between the pages and panels of Fear Itself.
Especially Valkyrie. I mean, there's a character that, while she's been used a lot, I don't think has gotten the spotlight, so that's going to be fun. Hank gets his times in the X-Men, obviously, and we've had some wonderful Black Widow stuff lately, so this should be fun, though.
Yeah, well, I mean, big things are in store for Black Widow. You know, she's a character that's profoundly affected by the Fear Itself story, and, same for Valkyrie. And, you know, Valkyrie is exactly like you said. It's a character that everybody loves. She's a big fan favorite. She's certainly a favorite of mine. And she deserves a little camera time. Ed's been doing an amazing job writing her. And I really loved how he finished the last essay story.
God, yeah. I like the two of them working together, too, as kind of femme fatales. Yeah. And it is a different role for Valkyrie. I mean, you expect it from the Widow. But, yeah, it's kind of cool seeing her kind of be that almost, you know, like the blonde Black Widow almost, you know.
Yeah. And then I'm also doing the 12.1 issue, which is a Steve Rogers story. And it's really about exploring Steve's new role, which I found really fascinating. You know, Steve is now Nick Fury. Steve is now
Tony Stark. More tied to the government than really since World War II.
Yeah, and you're going to see him struggling with that in a lot of books, over the next few months. And I think it was a very interesting place for the character because he's always been in the field and he's always been a soldier and he's always been a symbol. And now he's in a place where he's having to work in those shades of gray and he's having to make those tough decisions that guys like Nick and Tony have had to deal with. And
I didn't have the moral problem that obviously the flag waver would.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, Steve's always been able to be sort of above and removed from it most of the time. And this is a new kind of situation. And he's gonna run into a new face, a new character that I'm really excited about that's going to really challenge him and really point a finger and say, are you really that much different than those guys? And it's going to be a chance to sort of see how Steve deals with those things.
Fantastic, man. Now, unfortunately, I'm on my Sunday blanking, so I know I'm missing another title or something. So what else have you got coming up or working on that you can talk about?
Yeah, well, you know, at Marvel, I'm at that frustrating point in the year where you have all these things lined up and you can't talk yet.
So nothing else on the rack? I'm not missing anything that's on the racks right now for you? I do want to talk about Thunder Agents, obviously.
Yeah, of course. No, I think at Marvel, that's all I'm allowed to talk about right now, but it's going to be a huge fall and winter. The folks at Marvel, I'm having a blast. I'm so glad I signed where I did, and just been really welcomed into the family there. It's been fantastic, and I'm they've really inserted me into a lot of the big initiatives for the next couple of years, and I just couldn't be happier with how it's playing out.
Very cool, man. Well, we'll catch up to you when those announcements happen. Yeah, but as for Thunder Agents, I do want to acknowledge and be part of the chorus of critical acclaim, because honestly, it is a great series. And you are doing exactly what little we did talk about in terms of being able to take these characters into a different area, acknowledging the past, and the past is still very much tied to these new characters. But it's a fun book, and if you're really not reading Thunder Agents, do it while you can. I hope DC trades this, because if they don't, certainly pick up the issues, because it's a great run. It's a very good, you know, unique voice. It's tough doing a new spin on superheroes, and you found one with these characters.
This has been one of the most rewarding experiences of my career so far, working on that book, and the response to it's been just phenomenal. I've never had a response like this. It's really nice to see people.
Is it selling well?
I think it's doing okay as far as DC is concerned, but I think it needs to be selling more, certainly.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I applaud them trying this in the first wave in terms of trying to put some life into some of these properties. And honestly, you're doing it to better effect than I think some of the other projects did, unfortunately. And again, I give them the credit for trying, even with the Red Circle characters as well, trying to do something else, the Archie heroes. But it's tough. It's tough.
You know, DC seems dedicated to seeing the story through. They seem to really like the book. They've gotten some fantastic artists on the book. You know, there's a guy, I don't think I'm allowed to say who yet, but he's working on the second arc with me and Kafu.
Wonderful.
And a couple of guys are. And he's a giant. You know, he's a legend. And it's somebody that I've always dreamed of working with. So, you know, there's going to be some exciting announcements on that book. You know, let DC know that you want that trade is the biggest thing. You know, I think if people could, there's a lot of people out there who are hearing the good word of the mouth of the book, but they can't find the back issues. And so, we're at that sort of awkward moment where we don't have the collection out, but we're getting up there in issues.
Yeah.
And so, I'm really hopeful that the book can find more of an audience. I'm really grateful to Marvel for letting me continue to do it and continue to see the story through.
Are you on board as long as the book runs?
I'm on board as long as DC wants me on it. And we have a defined ending in mind for the story, but it's a little ways off.
Understood. And again, given what we've read so far in the book, I think some people can kind of see some of the foregone conclusions of where the story might go. Your own kind of Strikeforce Mutari, you will.
Yeah. There's a lot of twists and turns in the book, and there's a lot that we don't know about some of these characters yet that we're going to find out over the next few months. And we're just peeling back those layers, and I think it's going to have a really rewarding finish when we get there, and so it's a good story to stick with.
Another critical favorite, and obviously a sales favorite from Image, Morning Glories, things obviously seem to be moving quite well. I know the first trade is out at a very reasonable price too, so it's easy for people to jump on.
Yeah, it's entry level price, $9.99 for 192 issues,
which is fantastic.
You won't find another deal like that in terms of page count, in terms of cost per page. We sold through the first print run in less than a month, 10,000 copies sold, which is just unheard of numbers. So the book seems well on its way to having a nice long future. It's amazing. You know, the fan response to it at these shows is incredible. You know, people just asking questions about some of the different twists and turns is so much fun.
Well, congratulations, man. You're having a hell of a 2 years now. I mean, it started in 2010, and it sounds like bigger and better things are coming in 11. And, you know, it's great. It reminds me of really Kirkman a few years ago in terms of you got your own thing going on, but you're also making your impact in the mainstream and with DC and Marvel. And I think it's a win-win. And I honestly think it's when creators are afforded the opportunity to be able to have that kind of situation, it is a win-win. I mean, there's no better one. So hopefully, you know, these people that are reading the Marvel books and reading Thunder Agents will check out Morning Glories. And conversely, I mean, you know, it's all good. Nice going.
It's really all credit goes to Marvel on that. They were very understanding of how passionate I was about continuing to do creator-owned work, continuing to see the stories that I'd already committed to all the way through. They really bent over backwards to make sure that I didn't have to give any of that stuff up. So it really has been a win for everybody. It's really a nice position to be in. I'm a very lucky guy.
Are we going to hear more about your stuff probably in San Diego as far as future plans?
Something really big coming at San Diego. Really big. Biggest announcement of the career so far. There's something huge. I'm working with some big deal characters along with some big deal guys.
Awesome. Well, I'm more than likely going to be there, and if not, I'll certainly get you on the phone and we'll do a long one. But got a great response from our first talk, Nick, and that's good. And it's nice because it's funny because a lot of people have been bugging me too, saying you need to have Nick back. Almost everything you talked about isn't happening now. So this is a short one. This is the prelude to the next big one. And I imagine if not late summer, early fall, we'll touch base and we'll do a new
always
one.
Always looking forward to it. Always.
Thanks, man.
Of course, man. Thank you.
It's becoming a habit if I'm at a convention, I like to talk to these guys. It's Ryan Dunleavy and Fred Van Lente, the men behind Action Philosophers and Comic Book Comics. And we just talked to Fred a couple of weeks ago about issue 5, the litigation issue. And the great thing is I've come to their table and they are sold out of Comic Book Comics, which is fantastic. So, Ryan, I haven't talked to you in a while, so first, congratulations.
Thank you very much, John.
And wonderful. I'm thrilled that what a great response and everything, and that you guys cleaned the cake and you ran out of a product.
Yeah,
wonderful.
There are worse problems to have than to sell out of everything.
Well, and John, we should thank you because many, many people have come up and said they bought it because they heard our interview on Word Balloon. Oh, so thank you so much.
Hey, man, it's my pleasure. Action Philosophers is wonderful, but for me, Comic Book Comics has been such a delight. I was sad to learn, Ryan, that it's ending with the next issue.
Yeah.
But I also understand because you've been slaving over this for a really long time.
Yeah, it has. Well, number five had delays for all sorts of reasons, not just because it was so hard to draw. But, yeah, it's been a nice ride, and I'm excited to finish up the last issue.
Are they the kind of complications we'd rather not discuss, gentlemen? Is that...
Well, Ryan lost all of his limbs, and he's been drawing it. He's been drawing with his butt.
Very much like my left foot, exactly. Wow, that's incredible, Christy. Nice going.
Yes, all through the teeth. That's what I'm...
But it's... You know, I really felt issue five was great because I really think, much like every issue, sometimes comic fans, especially younger comic fans, will hear a portion of one of the classic, you know, stories, whether it's Frederick Wortham or, you know, the stuff with Roy Lichtenstein and people like that. And certainly I think all the various character lawsuits that I think a lot of the creators have gone over, a lot of the fans get lost, but I think both of you guys were able to achieve in that great way that comics can, a very clear, concise way of explaining what the lawsuit was, why they did what they did, you know, and of course, ultimately, the results. So, I mean, we talked a little bit with Fred, but Ryan, yeah, tell me about some of the art choices and stuff that you made in depicting the litigation.
Oh, well, I mean, it's hard for me to remember since I don't have the book in front of me to look at, but... Most of the art in the book is completely Fred directed, actually.
Okay.
And he's raising his arms in triumph. And he picks out most of the jokes and most of the imagery, so it's just up to me to execute them.
Okay. Well, and Fred, then I'll ask. I mean, it's were there any specific litigations that were like, oh, this like, or are you learning as well as you're doing this research for the book?
Oh yeah, most definitely, and we'll give a shout out to Jeff Trexler, who does the great legal blog uncivilsociety.org, and he also blogs for Newsarama, who helps us out a lot.
Is that the guy who's been following the Kirby estate?
That it is. Yep, and I knew him because we both served on the board of the Museum of Comic and Cartoon Art in Manhattan, and so I knew him, and he was kind enough to look over my babblings and correct various legal errors and factual errors and pointing out, you know, interesting aspects of the copyright situation that I wouldn't have already known. So that was really exciting, and all the lawsuits are really interesting. I mean, some of them, like the Gaiman McFarlane lawsuit, are just so high. I just found it so hard to wrap my brain around what the issues were that I was just like, one panel. Ryan, draw Sandman and Spawn tugging on Miracle Man's arms.
Well, and honestly, that is tough to convey. And Ryan, you had to do that in terms of, okay, you know, as we learned, Miracle Man was originally a knockoff of Captain Marvel, which, you know, again, Fawcett then discontinues doing Captain Marvel because of the DC lawsuit, and suddenly Marvel picks up the name Captain Marvel, you know, and starts doing their comic.
You hear all these stories working in comics and being around comics, and then, you know, finally piecing it all together, just us making the book, it's almost like a light goes off in your head. It's like, oh, this is how it's all connected. And that's really what our goal is with the whole series, is like showing that comics is connected in so many ways to each other.
Very cool.
I mean, I still don't understand how the courts sided with DC over Captain Marvel. I literally don't understand what the logic was. And I asked a couple of people, you know, was this just a bad decision or am I just totally out to lunch? And they're like, no, it's a bad decision. And that's why, you know, no similar case like it has really been decided in the plaintiff's favor for so long.
Well, and also, you know, I really felt, and again, this is my opinion, and I won't ask the gentleman to comment, but reading the depositions of the Kirby lawsuit, I found very interesting and, frankly, a little convenient that several of the creators, who I think still managed to, you know, get a supplemental income from Marvel reprints, kind of all fell in line. And in some ways, I found it contradictory to documentaries or interviews when these artists have described how they would write stories and say, oh, you know, I would come up with Spider-Man scenarios on a family car trip. And yet in the deposition, the word was, well, no, Stan gave us the script and we executed the art. And it's like, okay, that doesn't seem to jibe. And I really, and unfortunately, I think on the Kirby side, Evanier, who gave the Kirby kind of response, you're kind of screwed from a legal standpoint, as the judge, I think, trying to be as nice as possible, said, you know, this is hearsay. You weren't there. So you really don't know. All you got is this secondhand testimony from, unfortunately, the creator who's deceased. And I think it is tough to find a former Marvel creator that is going to say, you know, Jack was right. This is what was going on. Taking nothing away from Stan. Again, this was my editorial. So,
well, and to me, there's an even more important point, which is regardless of what that process was, what the Marvel method was, you know, was Kirby acting under the work for hire situation, and that, if that's the case, and if the courts find that, all of that other stuff about how much Stan wrote or contributed or created is basically irrelevant.
What, and one other thing that we talked about, Fred, that I don't know how much we expanded on it, but it was rattling in my mind. You said even if the relationship was work for hire, that a creator could still have some claim or be able to issue some sort of claim for after a certain period of time, or maybe I'm getting that wrong.
It depends on which law you're operating
under. Oh, I see. So it depends on specifically whether it was the old 1918 copyright law or the 09. Or 909 or 76. Okay.
I mean, my understanding is that I can speak more to the Siegel and Schuster case just because it was
the 09 law.
Yeah. Well, and that was clear cut the 09 law, and I just know more about it because the Kirby's filed their lawsuit as we were finishing Comic Book Comics number 5.
Gotcha.
So I'm not as familiar with the Kirby suit. But in the Siegel and Schuster's case, that has to do with termination. In other words, it doesn't matter whether or not they decided to give DC the rights to Superman, because they had created it on their own dime, they then theoretically, if the courts rule that, can then get back part of the copyright.
Sure.
No. It's called termination, is what the...
Right, okay. And again, that was the same thing for Joe Simon, I believe, yes. Yeah. Although, again, Marvel was able to kind of settle out of court.
Right.
With Simon, as they probably will with Siegel's estate and Schuster's estate. You know, I mean, it seems kind of natural to kind of, you know, make things easy. And certainly, as you guys point out in your issue, so much has been added to the Superman mythos that was DC-driven, you know, after Action Comics number one.
And, you know, again, the difference with Simon is that Simon had a character sketch of Cap and little notes on it, like the existence of Bucky, that predated his bringing it to Timely. So unless the Kirby estate can produce such material for the Kirby side of things, you know, my personal opinion is that it's all hearsay and that they have an uphill battle.
Yeah. No, and again, that's the rub.
And again, anyone listening to this, I'm a historian and a writer, not a lawyer.
We're talking out of our asses. I'm happy to admit that we're talking out of our asses, and any lawyer can correct us. It's all right. Ryan, I wanted to also point out a different issue, and I had forgotten about this. I think you guys, again, and maybe through Fred's direction, but I wanted to say there's a forgotten Golden Age creator, and in fact, I'm going to blank. Is it Jack Anderson that created the Golden Age Sandman? I forget the pilot's name.
Oh, crap. It's John Christensen.
John Christensen. Nice going, Fred. Bert Christensen, you're absolutely right. I know that for a fact now that you said that.
This time, we got it right.
That's the important thing. But really, it was really cool. I loved the drawing that you did that kind of combined the insignia that he put on his fighter plane
with the old Sandman. Yeah, that was a fun one. That was a fun page to do also. That was one corner of... Every once in a while, Fred throws in... I'm fairly familiar with comic book history, but that was, you know, there's always something, some big surprise in the first issue. I think it was the first or second issue. That was the big surprise for me. I had no idea about that story at all.
You know, and DC just released their 75th anniversary DVD, and I believe it's Mark Waid, who talks about Bert Christensen, and it's given for the fact that it's a 90-minute movie about the entire history of DC. Bert Christensen's given a nice minute, but the real story of Bert Christensen, which again I think you were able to convey in your art, is really incredible, and it's it's kind of sad that this guy has become this forgotten Golden Age character creator.
And I should say that we'll give a shout out to our buddy Brian Cronin, who runs, who's one of the masterminds behind the Comic Should Be Good blog, and it's from his comic book. We used to call it Comic Book Urban Legends Revealed, and now I think he renamed it.
It's Revealed now,
yeah,
is what it's called.
And that's from his side is where I learned that particular fact. And the bit in the same story about the SS newspaper denouncing Jerry Siegel and Superman, which is in that same issue.
Yes, absolutely. But I, you know, God, I'll tell you, I'm a huge like aviation war buff, and just the fact that this Golden Age creator was a flying tiger, and you know, was a real war hero that, you know, also, you know, created this great hero that still exists today. I mean, you know, Matt Wagner certainly had a nice spin with him. Really going back, and it's funny, after reading that, I went back and looked at a lot of the Christensen stories, and it was interesting to see that Matt really kind of expanded what were probably 8 or 11 page stories back in Adventure Comics in the 40s and made them these long...
That series was based on the original?
Yes, Sandman Mystery Theater, his first villain was the Tarantula, and sure enough, that first story arc was the Tarantula.
I had no idea that was his method. I thought it was all just completely original story.
Well, I'm going to have to talk to Matt about it, but it wouldn't surprise me. And I mean, you know, again, that's what I love about Wagner. I mean, Wagner just gets the Golden Age. He's doing it currently with the Green Hornet and just kind of spreading it out and really kind of distilling it into this amazing, you know, longer story.
And stuff like the Mad Monk and all.
Did the same thing. Exactly. Those stories were, you know, 8-page stories, and he turned them into these awesome, like, miniseries.
Yeah.
So, no, we all love Matt. Yay, Matt Wagner. Absolutely. And yay, Ryan Dunleavy and Fred Van Lente. No, congratulations. Now, Fred, I know what you're doing next. You're already doing it. You got a ton of Marvel stuff happening. Looking forward to Herc and Alpha Flight and the like. But we just spoke about it, so please.
I can plug something that just is new as of Friday. With my lovely wife, Crystal Skillman, the award-winning playwright, we're doing a play called King Kirby that's about the life of Jack Kirby, and it'll be going up at the Brick Theater in Brooklyn for 4 nights in June. So if New York City listeners, theater-goers listening to this, check us out.
That's outstanding, man. Well, that's beautiful. Yeah, that's incredible. Now, and the full biography, you're right up to the end?
More or less, yep.
Awesome.
We haven't finished the script yet, so maybe there's a twist ending where he lives or something.
Is Ryan going to be...
The Herald of Galactus.
Is Ryan going to be drawing posters?
Crystal often bribes me into drawing stuff for her plays, and I probably will be tricked into doing it this
time. Hey, man,
as well.
I, as I told you back in New York, and I even got a great little vanity card, sketch card that you did for me. It's really, of course, the unsung hero of comic book comics is Jack Kirby, and the various twists and turns of his career, the highs and the lows.
He's kind of the sung hero.
Well, yeah, exactly. Absolutely.
he's like hanging out in the bike ride, like, hey guys,
the Charlie Brown of comics.
Absolutely, man, and yes, that brow just weighs very heavy on that forehead, unfortunately, because of the different twists of his career.
It's great because, you know, in Action Philosophers, there's so many great. Ryan did such a great job of caricaturing, like, Schopenhauer is such a great, himself, kind of a great comic book character, and so is John Stuart Mill and all these other guys. And what's great is that Kirby is such a iconic-looking person, and so, you know, Ryan does a great job of making him a great comic book character.
Absolutely. What's coming up next artistically for you?
Right now, I'm in the middle of drawing something called the Dirt Candy Cookbook. I'm doing a 220-page cookbook as a comic with this great chef named Amanda Cohen who's been on Iron Chef, and she's got a restaurant in the Lower East Side. I'm doing that for Random House. That's my summer. I'm drawing vegetables being cooked.
Hey, man, you know, Eisner did it with military instructional books, as we all know, and you guys certainly did it with philosophers and now the history of comic books. So
I can't shake this nonfiction comics thing for the life of me.
That's cool. And I know also there have been certainly manga comics that have done that have been cooking comics and stuff.
It's because of the groupies, really. The sexy librarian groupies are really the reason why we do.
You can't see this on the podcast, but we're about three rows deep in young women.
You know, librarians listen to Word Balloon. I've been pleased to find out, especially this weekend, and a few came up to the booth and said hi, and in fact appreciate the show because they find an adult. They always say that the publishers are good about telling them what's teen appropriate and kid appropriate in comics, but it's tough to find out what the quality adult books are, and not adult with a hard A, but just the fact that it might be a subject that adults might find more interesting. Certainly Action Philosophers, Comic Book Comics, two good examples of that. So, and certainly this cookbook might be
another
one.
Pretty exciting. I think people that like our stuff, like even though Fred's not writing it, it's got the same sense of humor and the same type of things. A lot of anecdotes, a lot of, I'm doing a lot with playing with styles. We do like an EC section. We're doing takes office on Hostess ads. So it's really it's really fun. We have a Conan the Barbarian type character that helps teach knife skills. So it's a lot of fun.
Awesome, man. What's Tommy Atomic? Tell me about that.
Oh, it's a punk rock superhero romance. It's he's got the powers. She's the one who wants to fight crime. It's just like a personal project I've done off and on. And I just put together all these shorts I did for various anthologies over the years in one issue, and I printed it and brought it to the con.
Outstanding, man. Very cool. Is that also available at EvilTwinComics.com?
It will be when we get home.
All right. Sounds good. That's their website, EvilTwinComics.com. Of course, you can follow Fred's stuff as well through Marvel. But continued success, gentlemen. I tell you every time I see you, I'm always looking forward to the next issue. I'm sorry that Comic Book Comics is wrapping up, but that means it's only a short wait into the trade. Do we know? Do we have a ballpark idea when 6 is coming out? I know you just released March.
June.
Okay, June is issue 6. Do you have an idea of when you guys might be doing the trade?
Well, we're actually talking to some publishers about publishing it, so we don't, because we've been totally self-publishing at this point, but I think we're going to change that because we suck at it.
Well, not this weekend, man. As I said,
No, we do suck at it because if we were smart, we would have brought more product and wouldn't have sold it halfway through the show.
No worries. But, no, nice going, man, and honestly, look forward to the trade when it comes out. It is an excellent addition to your bookshelf, and now even a good thing to grab. I guarantee you, if you see issue 5, you will really enjoy it. It will settle a lot of bar bets with your comic book friends who might say, oh, no, wait a minute, I thought Simon got Captain America back. Oh, no, no, no. There's much not true.
Settle your bar fights without violence. Read Comic Book Comics.
There you go. There's the sell line. Absolutely. Ryan Dunleavy, Fred Van Lente, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, John.
Kids, it's Jai Nitz right here in Artist Alley. It's Saturday and it's bustling. And Jai has been all over the place. He's doing some great books for Disney and Marvel. Did an awesome Tron tie-in.
Yes.
And let's start with the Tron tie-in, because honestly, I like the movie.
Right.
I like the movie fine.
Well, see, the thing with it's funny because we hear that now is that people say, "What was wrong with it? It was a kids' action movie."
Sure.
And a lot of people, I think, were expecting The Matrix, like they were expecting it to be. And really, I always tell people this: like, it is The Matrix
for kids.
For kids. That instead of like car chases and gunfights, they have light cycles. And, you know, some shiny stuff that it blows up. And instead of people getting shot and killed or they vibrate into another character like we have in the Matrix.
True.
It's they derez. They turn into a bunch of blocks and they fall. And I said, and really, it's just not that different. And I took my kids and they loved it. They just ate it up. And I would never show them The Matrix because you've got... It's a little heavy. It's a little heavy. And I don't think it's that heavy anymore. Now we kind of see it when it's not...
We've seen inside the Matrix. We're not impressed.
We're not impressed.
We see tubes.
Exactly.
There's somewhere are there. Right?
But the thing with Tron is it was like The Matrix for kids. And this is how the way somebody described it to me. It's The Matrix with kids with a kick-ass soundtrack. And
very true.
And it's
disappointing that it wasn't actually nominated for an Oscar.
And I said the exact same thing about it. And overall, though, I have the Tron soundtrack in my car. My kids will say, hey, Dad, put that on. Now, again, they've been brainwashed because they're my children. And they know that, you know, Daddy does this, so that's good. But at the same time, they enjoyed it, so that's really all I can ask for.
Awesome.
And the next thing is, again, when you have two boys, you watch a lot of Disney XD and a lot of Cartoon Network Disney XD. They've got a new Tron cartoon coming out. They've got the new animated series that's going to be starting next year. Then another thing for 2012. They've got more books. They've got more everything coming out. But I also did a Tron, besides the Tron graphic novel I did, which is actually... It's an in-betweequel. It's the story between the original Tron from 82 and the second movie. It's the story that goes in between. And a lot of people say the exact same thing. They're like, I got so much more in the movie by reading your book. And I'm like, that's exactly what our goal was. It is canonical, but you don't need to read it to watch the movie. And Disney planned it that way, and everything worked really well for us doing that. But then I also wrote an adaptation of the movie. So that's actually kind of how I got the job doing Betrayal, was that I'd worked on an adaptation of the movie before. So they said, Disney said, oh, all this stuff that you're NDA'd on that you can't talk about, you've already read it all, so we don't have to bring it up to speed.
Oh, that's terrific.
So then I did an adaptation of the movie in book form, and now they're making an iPad book out of it. So
outstanding.
Yeah, so a lot of that stuff is it's just stuff that I don't know how it's going to be used, and I'm a Luddite, so I don't know what technology means when they say, hey, we're going to put it on this platform or that platform. I don't really know. But then when they show, oh, hey, it's an iPad book, it's, you know, $3.99 and anybody in the world can have it, that I feel really good about it.
Outstanding, man.
And it's something that, again, it's good promotion for me, and it's a good promotion for a thing that I was proud of doing. So it all
very
works
cool.
out. And because I've done that, I have a good relationship with Disney Publishing, which obviously now owns Marvel,
right.
and does crossover stuff where they like Disney Publishing had always been a lot of princess books. It'd been Princess Ariel or Princess Belle, and here's another princess book. And now they're saying, hey, guess what? We can make boys action books that are not Treasure Planet. We can do something
that
boys actually got into.
Yeah, with teeth on them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We can do Iron Man. We can do Spider-Man. We can do all this stuff that kids see now. So now Disney Publishing is saying, who on earth can we get to write these Spider-Man books? I wonder if anyone has any working knowledge of Peter Parker or the Green Goblin. And my editor, who used to work at DC Comics, is like, I have about everyone.
Is that Mike Siglain?
No, actually, I'm working with Nachi Castro.
Oh, Nachi, great, terrific.
He edited my Batman Strikes that I did,
sure.
and El Diablo, and he's my patron. So.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, so I literally just turned in a book for him before I came to C2E2. And then it's just one of those things that there's such a weird wide array of stuff. And I love Mike Siglain as well. I did a
good man
story for him. He's a great guy. And they're just, it's great that these guys that obviously know comics are in a position now at a publishing place for Disney where they say, we are doing comic book stuff. What do we do? And they are not going to drop the ball. They know exactly what they're talking about. They know that they can get guys who are me or like me that have an affinity for the property and can do good work. So it's actually a really big win-win for everybody around that.
Absolutely.
And then the other thing is that it's beautiful that Disney can still do graphic novel stuff, and people say, oh, well, why aren't they giving that to Marvel? And I'm like, well, because I know for Tron, we got notes from, not from some guy in the bowels of Tron, we got notes from producers of Tron.
Like, awesome.
And oddly, funny stuff, one of the producers from Tron was also from Kansas. So he was coming back for the holidays, and he and his family said, hey, we're going to have all the family's going to go to Tron. We're going to invite our friends from high school and whatnot. And one of the people that I knew that was going to it, that was in his family, was like, hey, I know a guy who wrote the Tron comic book. Do you want it? So that we actually met in Kansas at a Tron screening.
Great.
So again, and he said, oh, you're Jai, and I've read your Batman Strikes. And I'm like, oh my God, how did a producer from Disney get any of this stuff in his hands? And he goes, and he said, we do our due diligence. We're not letting some guy write the graphic novel that has no idea how to do this stuff. And I'm
awesome.
Like, and I actually said, isn't it crazy that someone's doing their job? Isn't it crazy?
Yeah, I understand. People aren't used to that on the corporate level.
Exactly.
I can appreciate that.
And so again, it was, we could talk about the craziest stuff, and it was, he had read everything I'd done, and I knew what he was up to, and it was this weird thing that we're also like, we're having like this kind of Hollywood-y meeting where, and then of course I'm going to kiss your butt, and then you'll kiss mine, and we'll talk about our product, and then we kind of look at each other and we're like, bar in Kansas. Like, how did this happen?
But fantastic, man.
But it was a really good thing for both of us that we talked more about other stuff. Hey, great. And then the other thing is, because they checked up on what I was doing, they looked at my Dynamite stuff too, and they're like, oh, well, I saw you're doing blah or blah. And I'm like, again, I said, how does this guy know this stuff? Well, it's because he's smart, he's sharp, he wanted good
product. He gives a damn, absolutely.
He gives a damn. Actually, the secret ingredient to life, he
cares.
Give
a damn, yeah, exactly.
He cares, so he's going to do something about
wonderful.
It.
Wonderful.
And so then, you know, we got to talk about what else are you up to? Well, I'm doing Kato Origins, or I'm doing the Green Hornet movie tie-in, and then, so we got to talk about a lot of that stuff, and then it just, for us, it's a perfect segue into what else are you doing? You know, and it was a really good thing to talk about people who cared and doing good stuff, and then also, you know, get to talk about somebody who doesn't normally care about comics, talking about comics and how we do them and how good they are and blah, 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 blah. So all in all, it was very good. And now, you know, I am doing a bunch of work at Dynamite right now. I'm doing Kato Origins there. I'm doing the Green Hornet movie prequel. I'm doing the Green Hornet movie sequel. I'm doing
Bring Thunder
with Alex Ross.
Absolutely.
And it's funny because it's so weird having a genie in a bottle, but if you say, hey, I have an idea for a cover, or I have an idea for a thing, Alex wants to collaborate. He wants your opinion. He wants to know what you're thinking. He wants your experience brought to the table. And he was saying something about a cover. He said, hey, I've got an idea. Do you want to, can we talk about this cover? And I'm like, you've forgotten more about cover design than I'll ever know, so I don't know why you're asking me. But okay. And I said, well, I would see it this way. And then like 2 hours later, I had it. in my email, sketched by Alex Ross.
Yay.
And it was a genie in a bottle. It's like, I wonder what would happen if blah would appear on the page. And then it shows up drawn by this awesome master of craft.
I'm with you.
I was like, that didn't happen. Did it really happen that I said maybe that could happen? And then in my email, wow. And then I would bring this up with him. I'd be like, I can't believe that happened. He's like, well, we're working together. Why wouldn't it happen? And that was the little thing. Again, I was like, you're not some, you know, Howard Hughes crazy guy living on a mountaintop wearing Kleenex boxes on your feet. He's a bright, interested creator. He wants to make a good comic.
Oh, no. I've talked to other people that are working at Dynamite on Alex's books, and I know Alex is absolutely involved, and that's very cool, and then wants it to be good.
And that's and the best part about that is a lot of times if you're involved with him is he's read your stuff. Again, due diligence. He's read your stuff, he liked what you did, and wants you on the project as opposed to, hey, they pulled a name out of a hat. I don't know how to say giants, but we'll hire you. But he was like, I really like that. Because he contacted me. He's like, I really like this thing you did. Can we get you to do blah? And I'm like, you're goddamn right you can.
Exactly.
Because, you know, again, he secret ingredient, he cares. So a lot of the stuff is going really well, and I've got the Dynamite panel in a little while.
Yes,
we should be either announcing new stuff or at least talking about what the new stuff is going to be.
Okay.
And the guys at Dynamite are great. Nick Rucci and Joe Rybant are very big supporters of me, and they are big boosters of me, so they are interested in keeping me working at Dynamite, which is great for me because I went full-time freelance for the first time in my life.
Terrific, man.
In June. So
awesome.
I have been flying without a net for about 9 months or
sure,
so.
Sure.
And I've aged 10 years, maybe.
I see the gray in your temples.
Exactly. In those 9 months, I've aged 10 years. But at the same time, it's like that's my dream job. It's what I've always wanted to do. And enough right stuff came together. I got Tron. I got the Green Hornet stuff. It all came together, and it was beautiful.
Awesome.
And now, since I'm living the dream, you're still worried about what's going to happen tomorrow.
I hear you, man.
The good news is they are big proponents and boosters of me, so they want to see me working and doing stuff. So I'm very happy to be doing it. And it's just great to have two different patrons, to have Disney and Nachi Castro, and then have Dynamite and my comic book end of stuff and doing a bunch of great stuff. And I feel like I'm doing good work, so.
You're doing good, Jay. No, absolutely, man. And I'll be talking to a couple other Dynamite people after the panel. And getting the full dossier from them. One of them was just skulking around as we were talking, in fact. But, no, that's great, man. Honestly, I see that you've upped your game since those El Diablo days. And I'm very happy for you, man. You're doing really well. And like you said, you're working on some really cool books. So congratulations. More power to you. And when the new stuff is announced, you can come on and we'll do a full-blown Wonder Balloon.
Excellent. Can't wait to.
Good time as always, John. It's good to see you.
Good to see you, John. Have a good one.
Hey, I got Jeremy Bastian here from The Cursed Pirate Girl, which is awesome because, as you know from previous Word Balloons, Jeremy is one of the great success stories of Kickstarter and is a guy whose patrons came to help him out. And he is, in turn, cranking out some wonderful work. So it's good to see you, my man. What's the progress on the next volume?
Well, the only impediment I had to working on the next volume was doing the special added incentive poster that, you know, Tom sort of conned me into doing, which is okay because I had fun doing it. It's done now. And so now, as soon as I get back home from the C2E2 show, I can get right back into the next issue of Cursed Pirate Girl. And I'm really looking forward to that, let me tell you.
Very cool, man. Well, I know you got an army of fans that are waiting for the next volume, and a very active artist alley table. So this is great. I mean, no, you got wonderful wares as always, and I think some of the great thing is you put as much attention to detail in things like the posters and all these added value things that you do for Kickstarters that you also put into the book as well. And people see it, and I think they appreciate it.
Well, thank you. When I was approached to do the added, you know, extra print, Tom just said, make it big and really, you know, something special. So it took me, I estimated it around 3 months of time out of my life to work on it. But I think it's pretty cool. I can't wait to see what people think about it. So
fantastic. And listening to other podcasts, I always want to get your con schedule because people do want to come by and buy stuff and hopefully get a sketch from you or whatever. So what... I heard, I think, from my friends at Comic Geek Speak, you're going to be doing their super show?
Yep. I'll be actually driving down there with Katie Cook and her husband, Ryan, because Emily, unfortunately, cannot make it. She will be too busy teaching.
But, very nice. Congrats, Emily. Very cool.
And so, yep, I'm looking forward to it. I'll have some books, good. So that's always good.
What other shows do you guys have lined up?
Well, not officially, but the shows that I want to do are Heroes Con, Baltimore. I'll be at San Diego,
good.
Of course. The Detroit Fan Fair,
very good.
Cherry Capital in Traverse City.
Oh, wonderful.
I'm really looking forward to that. Both. All of us are sort of going up there. Dave Peterson, Katie Cook. And,
sure. The Michigan contingent.
Yeah, yeah.
The Michigan Mafia, if you will. Very good.
Sure.
So. Jeremy's their wheel man. Not really, but that's all right.
I don't know about that.
No, that's awesome, man. Very cool. Well, continued success. Way to go. He's got a busy table, folks, so I'm going to duck out. But I had to say hi to him. And again, I've seen you since you got married. I wasn't sure if I saw Emily, so I had to congratulate her. But I'm sure married life is going very well.
Oh, yep. Same old. I just have some extra jewelry.
There you go. Jeremy Bastian, the Cursed Pirate Girl. Thank you, man.
Thanks, John.
Sunday at C2E2, and I'm hanging out with one of my favorite people. It's Paul Story. And Paul is a wonderful writer. He's done some great work in the past with publishers like Moonstone and, am I right, remember Gotham Girls?
Gotham Girls,
some great online DC stuff. And is back catering to the tweeners with a new book from Graphic Universe out of Lerner Publications. And it's part of the My Boyfriend is a Monster series, and it's called Made for Each Other. First of all, good to see you, my man.
It's always good to see you, John, and you're too kind. Either that, or if I'm one of your favorite people, you must not know a lot of people.
Or you could say what I always say when people say it's like aim higher. Aim higher. But, Made for Each Other. Now, this, based on the cover and based on the series being called My Boyfriend is a Monster, there's got to be a Twilight vibe to this kind of story.
I like to say it's the all the paranormal romance of Twilight filtered through the snarky yet affectionate tone of Shaun of the Dead. It's got its sweeping romance and, you know, star-crossed lovers, but there's also a lot of fun, a lot of funny, some light moments. So it was kind of nice to do all those ups and downs, but it's more than just teen angst. It's also a lot of humor as well.
And let's see, Eldon Cowger, thank you. Yes, is your artist, and based on the interior, what I saw on the cover, it's kind of a manga feel. I mean, there's a little bit of a manga influence there.
It's interesting. I think that what Eldon has is accessibility. It's got a little. It's distinctly Western. But it's got some touches. I don't know all of Eldon's influences, but it does have some touches, some touchstones that do have a little bit of a manga feel. So I think it's got a little something for everybody. And it's just he's so good with his expressions, with his body language, his compositions. He's been working on a webcomic, Astray 3, at astray3.com. For quite a while now, and this is his first published or print work.
Okay,
but he's doing a great job. It's just great stuff.
Well, and as usual, yeah. Here's another great digital artist who now, as you say, it's finally getting a print work, and it's not like this is a first book or anything like that. I mean, this is really beautiful art. Wonderful pen and ink. Good dark kind of tone, proper for vampires. And I'm a classic black and white kind of guy when it comes to that kind of genre fiction. I always think it looks a little bit cooler when it's in black and white.
Oh, John, there are no vampires in this book. This is a story of a guy who's put together from pieces and parts.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Oh, my. All right, never mind. There you go. Yes, I guess so. And, yeah, now looking at that, I can appreciate that. Absolutely. There you go. There's the Frankenstein vibe. Yes. Let's see. It says on the back cover here, Tom Stone stepped into Seward High and into Maria McBride's life like a bolt of lightning. He's the perfect guy for Maria. Nice, smart, and well-built. There's just one problem, his family. And let's see. Wow. His father's the town's new funeral director, and business is booming. The bodies are piling up thick and fast in Persephone Falls, Alaska. So Dr. Stone keeps Tom up late at night working in the funeral home, and it's clear that Dr. Stone and his creepy assistant Graves don't want Maria around. So it looks like a lot of fun here. This is very interesting. The first book in the series is called I Love Him to Pieces, and the second is Made for Each Other. This is, let's see, 96 pages?
No, 124.
124, there you go, man. There's a good. And what's the price?
The paperback edition is $9.95. There's a lot of story in there. Gorgeous artwork. I'm really happy with the finished product and with the price point, because I want a lot of people to see this book. And I think it's, if I may say so, I think it's well worth it.
It looks great, and it's digest size, but it reminds me more of the Vertigo Crime series in terms of the format that of the hardcover, and that's great. And obviously, too, beyond direct market, I'm sure that this is getting a nice book-selling push at Amazon and the various brick-and-mortar bookstores.
Yeah, absolutely. Learner Publishing is primarily focused in past years to the school and library market. So they've got a lot of good connections with schools and libraries. The hardcover edition is a library edition with the extra special binding that lasts through anything, except, you know, 3 years of middle schoolers in that case. They probably have to replace it. But it's so that's really great. I've actually heard that a couple of people say that they got it off of Amazon, or Amazon, it might have been Amazon UK even. It's going to be in comic shops next month, bookstores the same time. If you got a local comics retailer, it's Feb 11 1078. They can order it for you, or you know, you can drop in at your Barnes & Noble or Borders or any bookseller. Support your local independent booksellers.
Will there be a digital edition?
I think there will be. They've been doing a lot of digital editions. I don't think the digital edition's coming out right away. I should check on that. But Lerner's very good about multiple formats, trying to get stuff to as many as wide an audience as possible. It's you know, I don't know if it'll, you know, some sort of an ebook. Will be coming along.
And Moonstone, I know you've done past work with them, and I'm hearing that there's new assignments coming from Moonstone.
Yeah, I'm currently working with Earl Mac Roush, the creator of Buckaroo Banzai. He's writing stories, original stories for Buckaroo Comics, and then I kind of help translate them into comic scripts and work with the artist to make the visual sweep and quirky fun of Buckaroo happen on the page. And then I'm hugely excited. I'm working with an artist named Jake Miner, and we are bringing back Sheena, Queen of the Jungle.
Wow.
And that has been so great. It's every time Jake does a new sketch or page, I'm just even more blown away. He's got such a wonderful character. He does great action scenes, but a lot of character in the faces. That's also with Eldon on Made for Each Other. He does really, yeah, you know, the
oh, no,
expressions.
You can see it.
Yeah. And I've been really fortunate in that regard. So I've got, two great projects, two great artists. Sheena should be out in the early fall. Early
okay.
fall. And we're actually working with Paul Aretow and Stephen D'Souza. Paul was the producer of the Sheena movie from the 80s, and Stephen D'Souza
with the great Tony, not Tony Katana,
Tanya Roberts.
Tanya Roberts,
yep.
Shame on me.
Yeah, and actually now Sheena's been reimagined by screenwriter Stephen D'Souza, who most people will know from, like, Die Hard.
Going to say, I knew that name right away, absolutely.
Yeah, and he's translated Sheena to the South American jungles, which gives a whole sort of different vibe to the...
It's a different jungle, obviously.
Yeah, exactly. It's a different jungle out there. but she's still, you know, there's still a lot of great, you know, visual elements to do, but the animals are a little different. The mythology and the folklore and that
sure.
kind of thing give you a little different thing to play with. I'm really enjoying that. I think that's been a really interesting choice for him to make, we're having fun with that stuff.
Very cool, man. No, some I'm always happy to have a new Jungle Girl come back. Actually, Sheena's certainly not a new Jungle Girl. And really, going back, I mean, really in the Golden Age and stuff, she really was bigger than Wonder Woman in terms of popularity. What was...
And actually first. She was the first comic book heroine to carry her own book. There were a couple of Jungle Girls in prose before her, but she was the first Jungle Girl in comics. She was the first heroine to carry her own book. Before Wonder Woman and even before Harvey's The Black Cat.
And wasn't it, I want to say Irish, what was the actress's name from the classic 50s Sheena television show?
That's Irish McCalla.
So, what an awesome name.
Yeah, she, awesome, gorgeous lady too. Oh, yeah. And it's funny, I was just talking to
the object of Robert Crumb's fetishes.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I was talking to somebody who's a huge fan of the 50s Sheena, and he was bringing me up to date on some of the stuff that I don't necessarily recall from not being alive then. But
it hurts.
Yeah, I'm not that old.
Exactly. That's what I keep saying.
Yeah. And, you know, every year it's getting harder for people to believe it, isn't it?
Well, I understand.
Yeah.
The great creeps up on us. That's all right. But it's, looking forward to that in the fall. And coming out very soon, Made for Each Other, the second in the series of My Boyfriend is a Monster.
I should also point out, even though it's book two, the series don't need to be read in order. There are standalone stories. The theme is what ties them together. The first book, I Love Them to Pieces About Zombies, Made for Each Other, obviously deals with Frankenstein. There is My Boyfriend is a Fairy, My Boyfriend is a Vampire. I think there might be a ghost somewhere along the line. So, but each one can, there are a couple of supporting characters that do carry over, which is fun for comedic purposes, but the books themselves are completely, you don't have to read one to read the other. Although reading them all would probably be your best bet.
Doesn't hurt.
Yeah.
All right, excellent, man. Well, good talking to you. Have a good con. Paul Story, everybody. Check out his stuff, and we will catch up with him at a later date. It's awesome to see you.
Thanks a lot, John. Great to see you.
All right. There we go.
All right.
Awesome. We try to check in conversation or at conventions. Here, I'm going to start again. We try to check in at conventions when we see him with Josh Helder. Josh does Reading with Pictures, which is an awesome nonprofit organization that he's helped co-found. And we always want to check in on the progression of the group, what's going on. So, first of all, as always, pleasure to see you.
Same here, John.
And give us an update. It's a wonderful program, helping to promote literacy through comics.
Absolutely.
We're all advocates of that, and certainly, as I'm sure many of the comic fans listening, our first readers were comics and everything, and I mean that's how we learned how to read. So tell us what the organization is doing now.
All right. Well, right now we put out our anthology last year, big success. Now we're looking to build a partnership with a larger educational publisher or distributor so that we can really start getting into directly into the schools and libraries. We've been having a lot of success at, you know, bringing them directly to schools and libraries at the events that myself and some of our other members do. You know, obviously we've had great success at comic shows. We're having a fantastic show here at C2E2, but we need that bigger partner to take us to that next level. But on the larger side of things, you know, that's the book, that's the production pipeline. You know, we're excited about that. But in the larger scale of things, we're going to be bringing on an executive director soon from the nonprofit world who knows how to really take an organization like this and run with it. As part of that, we're going to be absorbing a comic website called merging with teachingcomics.org.
Oh, terrific.
Their resources will be brought to Reading with Pictures, and we're going to bring the resources of the volunteers that we have in line to help grow the resources that they've acquired over the years. And it's a fantastic resource set. I think probably one of the best on the internet, and we're just going to make it bigger.
I'm glad that you're finding this digital partner and also looking for these publishing partners, because given what you want to do from an educational standpoint, talking to book publishers in the educational world, it's interesting how the textbook world is really changing. And certainly when we were in school, the whole idea of buying a textbook, using it for the year, most of the time having to buy another new textbook. I know that Kindles are kind of finding their way in classrooms. Exactly. And I think it's going to be cheaper for the schools. It's going to be easier for students. And it will be easier to kind of update this information, new educational information, modularly rather than having to buy a new physical $100 textbook every year. So I think that's cool, and I'm sure that both of your partners are probably, you know, aware of that. And also, given that you're using comic books, it'll be easier to kind of plug in new stories when and you know, let whatever you guys put out evolve. Yeah. As the curriculum evolves.
Absolutely. You know, and it's an exciting thing where a couple years ago I was involved in a startup for digital distribution of comics that, you know, ended up not, you know, coming together. But what I learned is there's this huge market of, so we're talking about digital sales to end users. I mean, that's all that everyone's talking about right now. But there are these two gigantic institutional markets, the school system and the library system, that are radically underserved by ebooks. The best solution out there is OverDrive, and I think they have a good service, but it could be a lot better, and it's certainly not optimized for art-based content like comics or art books or textbooks, because half of a textbook is art. Sure. So a better system needs to be put into place, and that's a huge opportunity. And I think Reading with Pictures can provide kind of that wedge where we can help get that door open and start getting into that institutional market, which would be a huge boon to students, a huge boon to library patrons, and I think a huge boon to the comic industry in general, to wake up to the fact that there's this huge world out there, and we can reach them with our content because they want it. You know.
Well, and again, it also opens up a bunch of different genres. You can, you know, obviously history, math. Talking to Ryan Dunleavy, Fred Van Lente's partner earlier today, we were talking about how he's doing a cookbook. And I mean, you know, Will Eisner years ago was able to teach the military that if you really want the you know, servicemen to learn how to do these technical things, it's easier to do it with comic books than it is, you know, a dry manual. And obviously, I think the same thing applies when it comes to just young students trying to learn to read or whatever, you know, educational problem they have to solve and everything. Yeah, spell it out for them and do it with pictures. I think that's great.
Yeah, I mean, anything you can teach with words, you can certainly teach with words and pictures. And again, if you do it right, you'll teach it better. And we, when I give presentations on the sort of the call for comics in the classroom, the why comics should be in the classroom, I throw up one of those instruction manuals in airplanes. You know, how to put your mask on in case
sure.
of a water landing or whatever. And it's a comic. Now, it looks like it's what we would typically call a diagram, but a diagram is a comic because it's images in a sequence
Absolutely.
That convey information. And, you know, whenever it's the stakes are high and you've got to learn something and you don't know, they don't know what language you speak, they don't know what your literacy level is, they don't know anything about you other than you have eyes. And they, what do they give to make sure that you don't die? A comic.
True.
And so, you know, I was at a presentation here at C2E2 on Friday, and, you know, my closer was, you know, if you want kids to live, teach them with comics. You know, why do you want to kill children? That's that's my retort when people don't want to bring comics in the classroom. Why do you want children to die? What kind of monster are you? You know, so, yeah, it's a multiplier. You know, we attach it to anything, and we do it right, and we get a bigger bang for our buck.
Is it a two-way street as far as content, though? I mean, obviously, in things like the Reading with Pictures volume that you've come out with, you know, you're kind of setting the tone of what is being presented. How much of it is also going to be the educators coming to you and saying, we need this kind of comic to teach this kind of thing? I'm assuming that'll be kind of part of the agreement?
You know, absolutely. That's phase two. So actually, a number of the editors on this project, and certainly a number of kind of like uncredited consultants, were educators or curriculum developers, Peter Gutierrez, Sari Wilson, you know, a number of educators and Professor David Rapp at Northwestern came in and said, well, you know, it should have these things to it. And a lot of the people who we worked with in the anthology were people who were already very comfortable, familiar with that world anyway. They've already been in it, you know, people like Jim Gownley or Scott Saba. They know what that market needs because they've been serving it for years.
With other publishers that have come to them with educational, you know, assignments, I guess?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Ryan Dunleavy, of course, was also, and Fred Van Lente were also in it with their history of educational comics. You know, they know what that market is, and they know, you know, how to put stuff in teachers' hands that teachers actually need. The phase two is taking all the feedback we got on the first one, which was a lot of, I'm a middle school, you know, social studies teacher. I need something, you know, I need a full book for my class. So phase two is to produce a series of books that are subject matter and age guided. So it would be, there would be a book now, you know, what the length is, probably, it's definitely smaller than the anthology, which is 190 pages, but more like 80, you know, something manageable, but middle school social studies, bam, the book. And, you know, a bunch of pieces that speak to it with lesson plans built in right from the start, that we then release to, you know, to these classrooms. And there would be a whole set. So we'd release a middle school set. So the school library could buy the whole thing, or the school could buy the whole set. And the teachers could, the individual teachers could then make use of it. And we do that for all grade levels, all subject matters. And because we're a nonprofit and we're not, no matter what deal we make with a publisher, that's not going to change. We're not beholden to actually toe any publisher's particular line. So at the end, we can say further reading and we can suggest the best books from everywhere and say, if you got use out of this, go here. And go here and here and here, and then Scholastic and Pearson and maybe DC and Marvel, wherever, and say, this is your next step. This is the thing that you can then, a whole book full of stuff that you can take and run with.
That's awesome, man. Well, you know, I look forward to seeing whatever you've got next, and keep us apprised of the organization and its evolution. You know, I'm all for it, man. Again, another good example, Schoolhouse Rock. Look what they were able to do back in the 70s and 80s, teaching kids with very simple ideas and pictures. But, you know, something, all that stuff kind of sticks in your head. And you know, we had the podcasting panel on Friday, and someone had made the point, are you worried that comics still are suffering over the Wortham stigma? And I immediately said, no, it was 60 years ago. But further, that, you know, after that wave of, and forgive the politics, for a lack of better word, a conservative kind of concern, and I mean small c conservative in terms of what are comics doing to kids, are they hurting kids?
Yeah.
I think there was a wave in the 60s and 70s who recognized, no, this will teach my children to read.
Yeah.
And I think at the heart of your program as well, it, as we say, it can do so many other things,
yeah,
but at the very basic level, it will help children improve their literacy, yeah, which is the first thing, and it's, that is the great thing that comics do, and it's important to really hone that ability and make it go beyond that, and, as you know, like we just said, evolve it to serve all of these educational needs.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think the biggest thing is, yeah, there's whatever stigma Wortham put on us, and, you know, whatever stigma that remains is more than I in my experience, has been more than countered by the lived experience of people who read comics, loved them as a child, and know it had beneficial, had a beneficial impact on their learning process. You know, they knew they liked them, they knew they learned stuff from them, and why wouldn't their kids be the same? And so, you know, I think that whatever stigma we have or whatever challenges we face, and they're real, you know, I face them all the time, but we have far more allies out there than we know.
Absolutely. Well, what about, here's another idea. What about adult education? Are you, you know, I think to immigrants that are coming to the country, and again, it might be an easier way for them to kind of understand languages. Is that a thought that you guys have, or are you pretty much focused on children and obviously in school curriculums?
Well, I mean, as a theoretical matter, we're all about education, and education, of course, never should stop and never does stop. So the institutions of education are primarily concerned with children, and certainly it's easier to get them young than it is to turn around a ship that's been sailing in the wrong direction for a lot of years.
Sure.
And so, therefore, that's where our primary focus is, because that's where we think we can have the greatest impact. But that being said, the materials we make, especially that are aimed at the high school level, have a lot of would have a lot of impact for adult education as well, and for people who are learning English as a second language.
Exactly.
At any age level, comics are, I think, the ultimate godsend.
Sure.
And I actually just did a presentation at DePaul at their education department to a world languages class. So people who are teaching both non-English speakers English and English speakers foreign languages. So, you know, a combination of both. And they found that integrating images, pictures, and, you know, full on into comics has been has had a very powerful impact on their teaching process. And these are people, they're teaching kids, but they're also teaching college students. They're also teaching adults at, like, learning annexes and learning centers. So what we make has applications far beyond what I would call its core constituency of the K-12 market. And as we find those opportunities and as those people come to, hopefully will start coming to us, then we're more than happy to work with them, because, again, we believe comics are a powerful learning tool. They're a multiplier. Again, that multiplier phrase. Whatever we want to teach, if we use comics right, we'll teach it better. We'll multiply that effect.
Very cool, Josh. Well, that's great, man. Keep it up. Reading with Pictures is the nonprofit organization. I imagine people can go to a website and learn more.
Absolutely. Readingwithpictures.org. And excuse the website. It's part of the transition into the new executive director. We'll be overhauling it. But all the contact info is there, our Facebook page, our Twitter page. And you can always reach out to me directly via email, and that is on the website as well.
Excellent, man. Well, continued success with Reading with Pictures and your own writing career as well.
Thank you.
You know, mail order ninja and great all ages kind of material from Josh Elder. I'm sure the guy has some adult material that I'm sure we'll get to see eventually.
You know, it's on its way. There's actually been a very fruitful show for me in that regard too.
Great, man.
So maybe we'll have some stuff. Well, there will be actually stuff to talk about soon. That's underway already.
Terrific.
But hopefully there'll be even more stuff to talk about soonish.
Excellent, man. Very good. Well, congratulations, and we look forward to hearing from you. And we will keep you abreast of the evolution of Reading with Pictures. Thanks, man.
Thank you.
So that wraps up our coverage of C2E2. It was a great time, and I guess the con was a success. It sounds like they had about another 15,000 people this year compared to last year, and already in the mid-30s as far as attendance for C2E2, which puts them right there with, I think, some of the bigger shows other than New York and San Diego. And we look forward to next year's C2E2. It looks like things are off and running for big shows in Chicago. That'll do it for this edition of Word Balloon. Today it was sponsored by the Summit City Comic Con. Now that's coming up on June 18th on a Saturday from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at the Grant Wayne Center in Fort Wayne, Indiana at 120 West Jefferson Boulevard. It's right by their minor league ballpark in Fort Wayne. And you'll want to come out because there's a lot of great creators that are going to be in attendance at the Summit City Comic Con in Fort Wayne. Katie Cook is going to be there. Mike Norton and Tim Seeley will be there. Steve Bryant, Tom Scioli, Tom Kelly, Tom Stillwell. It's a good group of Toms. Dave Wachter's going to be out there. Kyle Latino, Andy Jewett, Hillary Barta. Panels will be happening there, as well as wonderful writers and artists. And it's a great opportunity to get some sketches from wonderful Midwest creators. It should be a lot of fun. It's being put on by the people at In Stock Trades and Discount Comic Book Service. That's their home base in Fort Wayne. And it's a wonderful one-day con that they've put together. And we're very happy to help them in any way that we can. I have a feeling I'll be doing a couple of panels there, just like I did last year. It was a lot of fun, and I hope to see you there. It's the Summit City Comic Con, and again, it's happening on June 18th from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at the Grand Wayne Center in Fort Wayne, Indiana. John Suntra saying thanks again for listening to Word Balloon today. Don't forget more episodes coming up this April. Actually, we've already had a ton of interviews in April that I haven't released yet. More coming, and it's going to be a very heavy episode month in April, so keep checking at wordballoon.com. Come to iFanboy every Tuesday for a new episode as well. In fact, I can promise you our next episode, Ed Brubaker, on the heels of this episode, talking about Steve Rogers putting the mask back on in Captain America, plus the new criminal arc that's coming up, and the fact that he wrapped up Incognito and Secret Avengers. All that discussion with Ed is on the way. Right after that, John Hickman starts his question and answer series with Word Balloon, plus a lot of great guests coming up as well. Chris Burnham is coming up. Francesco Francavilla is coming up. We're talking to the guys from 4-Star Studios in Chicago about their plans for the present and future. Really interesting shows coming up. Hope you join us here on Word Balloon to hear them all. Questions or comments about the show, reach me via email at john@wordballoon.com or the Word Balloon hotline, 312-841-7025. Or you can also drop me a line via Facebook under my name, John Suntris, or Twitter under John Word Balloon. Until next time, thanks for listening. Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2011.